industrialization would lead, and the creation of these factories would lead to a massive expansion of the city. Urban growth defied description in the period. Manchester, in a very short period from the late 18th century to the early 19th, jumped from a population of 77,000 to 303,000 within about 25 years. Liverpool, from 82,000 to almost 400,000. Birmingham, from 71,000 to almost 250,000. The cities, which had existed, obviously, but as towns, varied towns, and so now became industrial centers. Conditions in these towns were appalling. Very little concern about public hygiene, raw sewage, overcrowding. The first studies undertaken by the government to investigate conditions about housing in these industrial cities discovered in some cases that it was not uncommon in a number of these towns for 10, 15, even 20 people to be living in one room, maybe two, if they were fortunate in these industrial cities that had suddenly exploded. The pollution, the term wasn't used at the time, but the descriptions, the shock that one sees reflected in the art and in the newspaper commentaries of the period of cities literally where the sun vanished. The sun vanished. The smoke was so thick, so powerful, that people choked in the, quote, open air, close quote. And, of course, there was an extensive employment of women and children in the textile mills and in the mines. If you could employ women at lower pay than men, that was rational. That increased your profit. If it was rational, it was therefore just, it was therefore moral, and so one simply had to do it. If children could be employed for even less, and small bodies could edge their way back into crevices and coal mines, all the better. All the better. There were no moral qualms about this. In textile mills and in coal mines, children as young as 7 were working 15 hours a day, 6 days a week, in the 1820s. Between 1834 and 1847, only one quarter of all workers in English cotton mills were adult males. And the average life expectancy in the 1840s was twice as high for laborers in rural Wiltshire as those in Manchester. So one could see the impact of this was quite dramatic. Sending children out to work at a very young age while they were still growing began to attract an awful lot of attention, in part because by the 1820s, 1830s, it looked as if a new race of human beings had been created. Children who had been forced to adopt a particular posture for long hours at a time working would grow up with stunted necks, with all sorts of what seemed to be peculiar distortions of their torso, so that if one reads through descriptions in the works of people like Elizabeth Gaskell or, as I've said, Dickens, who these grotesque figures that inhabit the pages of these novels, or in Friedrich Engels' descriptions of working class life in his work on conditions of the working class in England, it is almost as if that industrial capitalism has taken the human form and fundamentally distorted it, that there are these grotesques who are around. And I don't think this is simply, the evidence would suggest that this is not simply sort of poetic license to deal with these descriptions, but rather actually one sees all sorts of testimony to the shock of good middle-class English folk confronted with a group of these industrial laborers in the early 1820s. I could talk about this at some length, but I'd like to read you the testimony taken at a parliamentary inquiry. A commission was established to inquire into the conditions in both the cotton mills and in the coal mines. And with your indulgence, I want to read you some of that testimony. I think it is far more powerful than anything that I could describe.